concept that some people like and some people don't like, unity. And you'll see what I mean, inshallah, as I go on. Those who don't like it, they call it coexistence. They like to use the word coexistence instead of unity. With who, of course, are we talking about? The Sunni school of thought. With the Sunni brothers and sisters that we have out there. Can you hear me? All right. So, some like to call it coexistence, some like to call it unity. But you know what I like to call it? Unity. Why? Because we have reasons for it, and we don't have any obstacles that get in the way of these reasons. What do I mean? Unity, what does it denote? It denotes two things, people, whatever, with commonalities and common grounds. They overlap, so they are unified when it comes to the overlap. Let's look at the Shia school and the Sunni school of thoughts, Usuluddin. What are their Usuluddin? What are our Usuluddin? We have the exact same Usuluddin. Tawheed, Nubuwa, Ma'ad, khalas, finished. So if every one of our Usuluddin are the same, that means someone else has to disprove that there should be unity. Right? What reasoning do we have out there to disprove unity? That will tell us, look, unity amongst you and them shouldn't happen. Because right now when we look at it, we see Usuluddin are the exact same between us and them. Okay? The obstacles for this are a few things. I'm going to point one or two of them out. They're more important, I think. We have hadith. How many of you have heard the hadith that says if a person fasts his whole life, in the nights of his entire life, he stands in prayer, he performs hajj every year, barefoot, all of this, but he doesn't have the wilayah of Amir al-Mu'mineen, none of that's going to count. We've all heard these hadiths and the similar ones and the likes of these hadiths before we have. So someone will say, yes, our Usuluddin overlap, but there is specific reasoning by Ahlul Bayt, by the Prophet, that says, no, you're not brothers. True, your Usuluddin overlap, but in practice, you have nothing to do with each other because of these hadiths. Yes? This is how some people do it nowadays. And mashallah, today, everyone knows how to pick up the hadith book and do their own quote-unquote Facebook ijtihad and Shia chat ijtihad. It's disgusting. I'm sorry to say it like that. With all due respect to my Facebook ulama, it's happening too much now. Before, you didn't see that many implications, you didn't see that many repercussions, but now you're seeing that, oh my God, it's causing major issues. So they will have hadiths, and they will cite them from Usul al-Kafi and onwards about this. But the question that comes up is, okay, when it comes to hadiths, and it comes to things that we do and don't do, and the things we are supposed to do and not supposed to do Islamically, yes, we can go to hadiths, but why is it that when it comes to fiqh and ijtihad, we go to mujtahideen for that? For example, I'm not going to go and say, okay, this is how you pray salat, this is how you fast by myself, I'll go to a marja, a mujtahid, who I feel knows his stuff, who I've done research about him, and I know he knows his stuff. Why do I go to this person? The hadiths are in the books already. Some people even say, I don't follow non-ma'sums, I follow the ma'sumin themselves, so I go to the hadith books. If it was that easy, everyone could do their own ijtihad. The problem is we don't have access to a ma'sum, but we have access to hadith books. I know we have access to hadith books, but the hadith book is saying that so-and-so said so-and-so, said so-and-so, said so-and-so, said that the imam said this. Five filters, for God's sake. Who says the wording is the exact same as it was when the imam said it through five filters? Any of you guys played that phone game? Where you sit in a circle, someone whispers something into someone's ear like, I hate this dude. And then that person whispers it to the next person, and it goes around, it turns out to be, I love this dude. You know what I'm saying? And many other things that factor into this whole story of ijtihad. So, okay, I know we have hadiths, but the same reason why you don't go do your own ijtihad when it comes to najasa, tahara, salah, sawm, zakat, khums, all these things, the same reasoning applies here too. That we have a very, very sensitive subject of unity and disunity, brotherhood, animosity. What is our duty? This might be more important than najasa and tahara, actually. All of a sudden here, everyone's busting out with their hadiths. Is that how it works? No, it's not. That's not how it works. We go to our greats again. We knock on their doors very humbly. We ask them, what is our duty in this day and age? Can we have unity or not? They will tell you, yes, you have unity. Where'd you get this from? We have hadiths against this. Well, we have hadiths against, I don't know, certain things that we do today in our fasting, in our psalm, in our salat, and all these things. But still, because of those hadiths, these maraja, they still have another fatwa. The same way they do their ijtihad there, they're doing their ijtihad here. There are ways of reconciling hadiths. For example, the hadith that the imam says to one of his companions, that look at that old woman there. That old woman that lives in this neighborhood who happens to be non-Shia, even she's going to make it to Jannah. Whoa. But didn't you imams tell us that anyone who doesn't have our wilaya will not make it? So you see, you will see one side of the story and then the other side is neglected. And some people vice versa. They see the other side and this side is neglected. No, we have different sets of hadith and adillah here. They have to be reconciled. That is the job of a mujtahid. So we go and knock on their doors, we ask them, they say, yeah, we have reconciled. And it's very simple. That yes, unity is there. The concept of unity, not coexistence. That we're just going to get along and not kill each other. No, it's more than that. This is our ulama telling us. But a problem comes up. People come out and they say that these ulama today, they have their own interests. They have their own agenda. What am I talking about? These are post-Islamic revolution ulama. And it's in their interests to keep the Sunnis on their side and not be enemies with the Sunnis so that they can secure their interests. That's what it is. Okay. So what are we supposed to do? We gotta see what the old schoolers say. Old school ulama. What do you mean by old school? Pre-Islamic revolution. Let's go to Najaf. Let's go to those who were in Najaf, those who were Jabal Amil, those who were Qom before revolution. Fine, let's go. Is that enough for you? Is that going to fix the problem? Yeah, that's going to fix the problem for me. Because I know I got to go to the ulama when it comes to my deen, and I want to go to the ulama that are not biased, quote unquote. Astaghfirullah, I'm upset that I say this. That's how some people see it. Okay. I just want to give you one or two examples. There are many. The list goes on and on, my friends. Ayatollah Sheikh Muhammad Rida al-Mudhaffar. Huge. He's huge. Till today, we're still studying his books in the Hawza, everywhere. Who else do we have? Allama Sharafuddin. We have stories about him. Sayyid Muhsin al-Amin al-Amili. So interesting. Someone came to him. Yeah, I fear for my life, but I'm going to say it anyway. Someone came to him and he said, I want to become Shia. This guy is pre-revolution, guys. I want to become Shia. He said, okay, you're Shia. He said, no, I want to say something that makes sure I'm Shia. He said, okay, say the Shahadatain. He said, the Shahadatain. He said, okay, now you're Shia. That's what it is, the Shahadatain. He didn't even ask him to say, Ashhadu an Aliyan Waliullah. It's interesting. Sayyid Muhsin al-Amin, I don't know how many of us know this big heavyweight. He's written the book, A'yan al-Shia. Oh my God. Old school, let's do old school. Fine, you asked for it, let's go. And let's point out one of these, just one of these, old schoolers. Ayatollah al-Uzma, Sayyid Hussein al-Burujerdi, rahmatullah alayh. Oh, old school, all over. It's all over him. What does he say? You want to talk about him a little bit first, about how his greatness, his caliber? Let's talk about his greatness and caliber. Nowadays, we have this concept of you have to follow the most knowledgeable when it comes to taqdeed. How many of us have heard this? Let me see some hands. All right, 10%, good. No, I'm just kidding, it was more. So now some people are like, we can't find the most knowledgeable. How do I identify? Yeah, well, sometimes, are you with me? Sometimes we can't identify it, fine. In some eras, there won't be a most knowledgeable. There will be some who are the most knowledgeable, but there isn't one that's the most knowledgeable. Personally, I've heard this from the greats in Dars. And after Dars, they've spoken about this. That today, it might be harder. But back then, during Ayatollah Burujerdi's time, this is the example that all these ulama use for the a'lam, or the most knowledgeable. They say, for example, An example of the most knowledgeable would be Ayatollah Burujerdi in his time. Everyone else was his student. No one was up to par with him, hands down. So he studied in Najaf. He comes to Iran on a visit. They really, really insist, that the Khomeinis and the likes of him, insist that you come to Qom. And eventually he is convinced and he comes to Qom. Now what happens in Qom? Qom is full of heavyweights. There are maraji' there already. One of these maraji' gives his place of, you know, leading the salat in the haram, or the faydiya, the great hauza of Qom, gives it to Ayatollah Burujerdi. Now that you're in town, this hauza ain't big enough for the both of us. You lead the salat, because you're the man. Another of the maraji' gives him his kursi of dars, his chair of teaching. Dars al-Kharij says, you take over. Advanced studies, all yours. I'm going to sit here. Another, like Ayatollah Khansari, the one who did the rain prayer of Qum, and it rained. He's very famous for that. This person is very spiritual. He goes and sits in the, he's a mujtahid. Undisputed. He goes and sits in the dars of this great Ayatollah Burujerdi. Oh my God. All right, so we're talking academically. He's way, way, way up there. And he's the example for the most knowledgeable of his time. Alright. In Najaf we had Ayatollah Uthma Sayyid Abu al-Hassan al-Isfahani. Back then, during Ayatollah Burujerdi's time, he was the great marja of the whole Shia world, Isfahani. He passes away. Now Ayatollah Burujerdi is the figure of the Shia Ummah, and he's leading the Ummah. This is how great he is. His greatness is, this is a summary of his greatness. As one of the guys, when he calls me sometimes, I'm like driving in Qom, he calls me from here, he's in Dearborn actually. He calls me, he's like, Salam, your sheikhness. So we're talking about Ayatollah Burujerdi's sheikhness here. He is huge. Okay. Now that we know he's old school, pre-revolution, he's a heavyweight, the heavyweight of his time. Now let's talk about some of the things that he does when it comes to unity. Recite a salawat. And he's known for his innovations in fiqh, usul, and rijal. So he goes, number one, he says to understand Shia fiqh, jurisprudence, you have no choice but to understand Sunni jurisprudence. Whoa, I thought that was like najis. I thought that was off limits. I thought we had nothing to do with them. No, he says to understand it, you got to go there. Oh, maybe he's just a normal alim. No, I talked about his sheikhness before this. He's not a normal alim. And he's known for this. That to understand Shia fiqh, you have to understand Sunni fiqh. Whoa. Okay, number one. Number two. Not only does he say you have to understand it, he is quoted to have been always justifying and explaining Sunni rulings. This is why they say you have to pray on time and it's haram for you to postpone your salat. Of course, we, the Shia, we can pray. There's a time span for our salats, right? We can pray it within that window, within that frame, time frame. But for the Sunnis, according to some, if not all, they have to pray on time, he explains. This is why. Oh, are you on their side? You sound like you're on their side. He says, no, I learned this from my teachers, like Shaykh Al-Tusi, like Shahid Al-Awwal, Shahid Al-Thani. I'm sorry if I'm getting a little technical here. We gotta act like we know our stuff. All right. To make things even worse for some people, and of course better for us, in Al-Azhar University. Where is Al-Azhar located? Of course, Egypt. Of course, duh. What kind of question is that? Al-Azhar, he had his representative there, and in his final days, they say he would pass out. When he was feeling real ill, he would pass out. When he regained conscience, he would say, did that representative go or not? Make sure he's going. That's how important it is for him. Back in that day, I'm just bullet points, just going through them. There's a lot to say. And this is only one of our ulama. Back in that day, they opened up a place called Dar Taqrib. Dar Taqrib bain al-Madahib al-Islamiyya. Taqrib means proximity, right? It's an institute of proximity between the different denominations of Islam. That's the name of the institute that was established. Where, if I remember correctly, it's in Egypt. But some open-minded Sunnis and Shia were behind this. What does he do? When he's in Najaf, He supports this cause all the way till he goes to Qom. And he says, I have high hopes in this. Is this all about coexistence, guys? Coexistence, we're just going to tolerate each other. Oh, he likes the killer of Fatima Zahra. I have nothing to do with him. How many of you have heard this line before? He is the killer of Fatima Zahra. And he loves that person who killed Fatima Zahra. So I have nothing to do with him. Brother, sister, if that person knew that this person was behind that, they would hate them more than you. The same way they pray Jama'ah better than us. The same way they're observing of the Qur'an more than us, etc., etc. If this had reached them, they would have been better than us in it. I hate to break it to y'all. The truth hasn't reached them. They're mustad'afin, lots of them, mustad'afin. If the truth hasn't reached them, they're not responsible. The ones who didn't let the truth reach them, they are responsible. Like who? Like the Bani Umayyah. And all the fabricated hadiths that they made up. That didn't let the truth reach these poor individuals. But just because that is because he likes that person doesn't mean I have nothing to do with him. No. On the Day of Judgment, you might see that he's ahead of you. This is what ulama are telling us. For the first time, the grand leadership of the Shia world and the Sunni world were in contact with each other. You look into history, you don't see this. For the first time during Ayatollah Brujerdi's time, they're in touch with each other. The Sunni world and the Shia world, the two great figures, they're in touch with each other, sending each other letters between Brujerdi and another person by the name of Sheikh Abdul Majid Salim, and after him, of course, the famous Sheikh Al-Shaltut of Al-Azhar, who came out and he said, officially, we recognize the Shia school as an Islamic school. Unfortunately, unlike today, we've messed up, they've messed up, everyone's messed up, and things are different nowadays, unfortunately, a little. But these are ulama of the Sunni school and the Shia school. You brothers and sisters, when I look at it, what I see is that the more ignorance, the more we're not learned enough, the more things are in the hands of those who are illiterate Islamically and so on, the more of these issues we have. It's interesting how the more learned you are, Shia and Sunnah, the more respect there is, the more recognition there is. The more they die for each other. Look at Alama in Al-Muraja'at, this famous book by Sharafuddin. Yes? Abdul Hussein, Sharafuddin Al-Musawi Al-Amili. In it, you're like, oh my God, are these two lovers? Was that 50 states legal, you know, thing, was that back then that was passed? Or was it now? Or like, what's going on? Because the love letters in this book, these two great ulama, he sends a letter to him, he says, I want to know more about your faith. I love you, I love you, I love you. Can you tell me more about your faith? He returns a letter, I love you, I love you, I love you. Sure I can. But of course, you are much more learned than I am. But thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you. And then the other one says, I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, it just goes on and on. It's sometimes it gets kind of gross. These individuals, but you see, the more knowledge, the more respect. The more understanding, mutual understanding between these two. I feel that this is what's going on and what's going wrong nowadays. Things are falling into the hands of those who are not ulama, one. And two, when the ulama say something, unfortunately, this is a feature and characteristic of the 21st century that we live in. That you can destroy the image of anyone who you disagree with. Ulama, doesn't matter. 70 years in Hawza, doesn't matter. Allama Tabatabai, he said this, oh, that sounds like shirk, na'udhu billah. Who the heck are you? Allama Tabatabai doesn't understand that this might be shirk, and you're saying this is shirk? But this is the 21st century we're living in. Computer warriors, keyboard warriors, Facebook, iPhone, and all that kind of stuff. I should just throw my phone away. Alright, what else do we have? Shahid Mutahari, he says that Ayatollah Brujerdi was ashiq. He was in love with Islamic unity. Shahid Mutahari says this about Brujerdi. And now the Farsi I have here, I don't know how to translate it, but it says like, he says, comparing the heart of Ayatollah Brujerdi to a pigeon that's flying and flapping its wings, going up into the sky. He says the pigeon of his heart was flying in the sky of unity. That's how much he had high hopes, and he had love of this concept. And he saw that this is the future. This is what if the future is going to be bright, it'll happen through this. Now let me read something to you, and I warn you, I used to do martial arts when I was like 10. Now I'm going to read this, okay? Although I can hardly run nowadays, I'm very out of shape. But Ayatollah Burujerdi would say in his Daris, now, I don't want to get myself in trouble, but I'll read it. Our difference with the Sunni school is 2 points, he would say. The first is Khilafa, of course. And the second is the Hujjiyya, or the authoritativeness, or authority of the Ahlul Bayt, and that the fact that they're the ones to go to when it comes to Islam. So two things we have, two major differences. One, the Khilafa. Who was supposed to take the place of the Prophet? One. And two, even if you don't accept that Imam Ali had to take the place of the Prophet after him, still, it's interesting, still, you should still understand that the Ahlul Bayt are the ones you go to for the deen, and his major reason for that is the hadith of Thaqalin, as I shall read. He says, Khilafah is a historic topic that has passed and cannot be repeated today. What we need to do is discuss the authority of the sayings of the Ahlul Bayt with the Sunni school. And what do we base our arguments on? On the hadith of Thaqalayn, the famous hadith of Thaqalayn that everyone accepts, except our Wahhabi buddies. Now, of course, this does not mean that we assimilate and we become Sunni, as some people are trying to show us today and try to hammer down into people's heads today, that these people who speak of unity, they are Batri, they are Sunni, they have Sunni tendencies. No, trust me, we do not. They are fooling the masses, unfortunately. And unfortunately, the masses don't have the time, or maybe don't have the understanding, I don't know, to sit down and think and be able to differentiate between these two aspects. Just because I push for unity does not mean that I accept that faith or that denomination. So we don't assimilate. We're not going to assimilate. We talk about what we need to talk about respectfully. Unfortunately, nowadays, some people think by cursing and slandering, we can get more people to become Shia. Yeah, you made 17 people Shia, but you caused 170 Shia to die somewhere else. Very simple. Okay, all of these problems happening when things are in the hand of the juhal, those who are emotional a little too much. Okay, now let's come to the US. I know we're in the US already, but let's talk about the US a little bit. We have, when it comes to, am I talking too much? Sheikh says, don't worry, you go on because I'll get you back. We have two grounds right now. We have the Middle East and we have places like the US and Canada. I'm not even going to talk about Europe. Europe is a different story, I feel. But US and Canada, yeah? Canadians, you can be proud that I included you as part of us. Some people say, well, right now, Sunni and Shia are like just like at each other's throats, and there's no point in any of this. And that might be true to an extent. We don't get the opportunity to even talk to each other, but that's in the Middle East, brothers and sisters. We're talking here now. All the things that I said so far, and I give you one example of an old schooler. I give you one example. There's many more examples. Articles have been written. There's too much out there. Unfortunately, this stuff hasn't come out. Others are taking advantage of this, the fact that we're not spreading these things. As a matter of fact, let me just say this in parentheses. Some of those people today that are anti-unity, and they associate with a certain clan, a certain movement, a certain group, their great teacher, who passed away maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, in his book, I have seen it, not once. He says, whoever speaks against Islamic unity that does not know anything about Islam, whoever speaks against Islamic unity this, Islamic unity that. It's interesting that those who are adherents to this school, nowadays they are even negligent of this. Anyway, that's a parenthesis on the side. Let's talk about the US a little bit. All these things that I said so far are theory. Some places you will not be able to implement this, and you might not be able to have dialogue with others. For example, back home, or wherever home is. I have no idea where my home is right now. My home is the plane. I'm always in the plane. So, we're talking here. Here, there is room. People here are tolerant, more tolerant. They're willing to give you an ear and listen.
This is very clear. Some people, even though here people are tolerant, they still tell you, no, we have nothing to do with them. What I'm talking about is that if there is any time, if you ever see a chance for dialogue, the things that are said about how, no, we have nothing to do with them, this, that, the ulama, back in the past, this and that, this story, that story of this alim who said this, this alim who said that, these things are not to get in the way. So theoretically speaking, the unity concept is there. Personally, I see it very strongly. It's there. Sometimes we're able to implement, sometimes we're not able to implement. And I'll end on this note, that if you want to have dialogue, you have to understand the opposite side. You have to. And there are two things that you will have to understand when it comes to Sunni Islam if you want to have dialogue. Number one, you have to understand how they look at the Sahaba. This concept of Sahaba, if you don't understand it, you will never be able to do dialogue. That's one. I'm not going to open it up at all. And number two, their approach to the texts, other than the Quran, of course, their approach when it comes to the hadiths and the sahihain, and how they accept everything that's in those books, how much, to what extent, how do they justify certain things, these are things that have to be studied today. So brothers and sisters, do we have a lot of time on our hands? No, we don't have any time on our hands. Inshallah, we take heed from what our ulama say, and Allah gives us tawfiq, and we move forward, inshallah. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad.
Thank you, Sheikh. I don't know if you have left anything for me. You covered it all. It was my mistake. I told you to go ahead first. You're doing a good job. Great. Proud of you. You really brought the blessing of from Qom, from Ma'suma and Imam Rida, and the blessing and the light of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Salatu wassalamu ala Sayyid al-Khalaiq ajma'in Abul Qasim Muhammad Salawat. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said in the Holy Book of Quran, well, first let me say Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I was afraid to say Allah said Assalamu alaykum. We're going to say which verses, which ayah is that? Adkhuluha bisalam. إن هذه أمتكم أمة واحدة وأنا ربكم فاعبدون. إن هذه أمتكم أمة واحدة. God said, this human being society, this ummah, this nation is one nation, and I am one Lord of yours. So worship me. That vision is a global vision, and I'm gonna speak. Because Maulana did a great job from the unity in the earth. I'm going to talk about the unity in the sky, maybe. So then we'll make it all complete, inshallah. So I'm going to look at it from the top to the bottom. The way we look to the world, I was trying to say it yesterday, there was not enough time. I don't look to God from myself or from the people. I look to the people through God. I look to myself through God. So I start from God and going down. Why? Because through the eyes of God, we all will be united. Through the eyes of the Creator, we all will be united. Yes, there is a difference. Otherwise, we won't have different religion, different sect, different madhab, no doubt. But to speak in the world of disunited time, looking for a unity. So the reason I look from the top to the bottom, because sometime we go out of the balance. Sometime we fight for the haqq, which is Aliyun ma'al haqq, al-haqq ma'a Ali, no doubt. But sometimes I fight for the haqq and keep going, fighting for God, but forget about the unity. It is so important to have dual goal in the same time, fighting and uniting. Very important. And keep the balance in between. That reminds me of Ayatollah Beheshti, Allah bless his soul. He was murdered. He was one of the first revolutionary of the Islamic revolution in Iran. One time I saw his interview, that was maybe before Mawlana is born. He's so young, mashallah. That's in the first year of the revolution. I saw him on ABC News with Tate Koppel. He asked him, he was sitting like this, and his wife beside him like this, you know, that the Iranian, she holding her abba. And he asked him, what are you up to in Iran? He said, Islamic revolution. He told him, that's new. What do you mean by Islamic revolution? He speak five languages. That's Ayatollah Behishti. He said, he speak very, you know, thick voice. He said, we have two hands. We fight in one hand, and we build in another hand. It's just like, you know, the karate. Like when he said, I have 10 level of karate, I took a little bit away. So you fight in one hand, fight the division, fight the enemy of the God, fight the one who want to divide us, protect our nation, our faith, our ID, but in the same time, maintain the unity. Just like having sword and armor, safe and dire. That's how, you know, Imam Ali used to fight. So maintain this, defend the unity and fight the enemy who wants to divide you. Again, it's reminding me of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, in his war, like in Badr, Hamza, his uncle, alayhi salam, Hamza Ammun Nabi, the lion of Islam, Asadullah, when he fight the mother of Muawiyah, Hind, she wanted to, you know, kill Hamza and Ali in the same time. She told Wahsh, she saw it in that the message movie, Al-Risala. She told him, kill Ali and Hamza. He said, Hamza, I can kill him. But Ali, I can't. She said, why? He said, he told her, Hamza, when he fights, he keep going, he doesn't turn around. So I can get him, and he did. Hit him with the spear in his bag, and he was murdered. She told him, how about Ali? He said, I can't. He said, why? She said, why? He said, he fight in four cycles, in four directions. He fight from the back, from the right, from the left, from the front. Salli ala Muhammad wa Ali. Just like, if I'm right, you can correct me. When you fight in karate, you know, you fight and you protect yourself, you know, and you fight and you protect yourself. So the same thing, fight for the unity of Islam and protect it. Don't go too much. Because sometimes we become extreme and we forget about unity. If we become extreme, I spoke about it a little bit last night, we kill the nature, the fitrah. The fitrah is such a balanced nature of Islam. You need to keep it alive because Islam dinul fitrah. Islam is a religion of nature. You got to protect it. Don't be too extreme. Don't be too slow and too cool, and don't be too hot. Medium. In هذه أمتكم أمة وسطة. In the middle. Be in the middle. So, why would the nature, the hues, will be dead? Because, for example, you see in America, in Middle East, for example, and with America, why America become a superpower and discover so many scientific discovery? Why? Why they are ahead of us? What's wrong with us? What's wrong with our children? Nothing wrong. But they flourish them. They give them all the opportunities in the lab, in the school. They encourage them. So they protect their natural fitrah. So they discover things. In back home, in some of the Arabia extreme social atmosphere, you hit him with the, you grow, you know, raise him with hitting, the teacher hit him, the uncle hit him, that will kill the nature. Then when you come here, he's scared. He cannot flourish himself. So to be extreme here, by the way, if you become too liberal, you'll kill it. You'll kill the fitrah. If you become too extreme, you kill it. That's why you gotta keep it. The same thing in Islam. Don't be too much extreme. Don't be too much loose. Fight in that middle area. Now, go short. The request of the unity. What does it need? I will say maybe 3 points. First, we have to have a goal to unite with the Muslim or non-Muslim. We have to have a goal. What is our goal? Allahumma inna narghabu ilayka fi dawlatin karima tu'izzu biha al-islam wa ahlih wa tudhillu biha an-nifaq wa ahlih. Lord, we pray for a holy government, for dawlat al-adl al-ilahi. We are looking for the appearance of Imam al-Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-sharif. So we have to have a roadmap, a goal. If people cannot unite with us in this goal, it's hard to unite for what? What is our goal? For example, these days, let's talk a little bit politics. There is two saviors in the world, one from the descendants of Isaac, his name Jesus, and one from the descendants of Ishmael, his name Mahdi. These two disappearing 33 years old, they're still single. That's good news for the single girls. Two singles, two disappeared, two qa'im, two alive. One of them, both of them 33 years old, disappeared. One of them will appear in Jerusalem, one of them will appear in Mecca. In the same time, they will meet. I don't have time to explain what's going to happen when they're going to, but they're going to meet. Then they will start the government of God, the peaceful movement of God. So, there is a roadmap here. Now, who agree with this theory? Christian and followers of Ahlul Bayt, right? We are waiting for the Mahdi and they are waiting for Jesus. So we have some common ground. For example, listen, the deniers of Jesus, the Zionists, and the deniers of Mahdi, the Wahhabis, are united. The deniers are united. So let's look for some people agree with us in the roadmap so we can make some kind of deal. Because the roadmap, the goal is important. This is one way to talk with the world, non-Muslim world, to look for some kind of common ground. قُلْ يَا أَهْلَ الْكِتَابِ تَعَالُوا إِلَى كَلِمَةٍ سَوَاءٍ بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَكُمْ أَلَّا نَعْبُدِ إِلَّا اللَّهِ. Common ground between us and the others. This is will lead us to the other point where we need to look for the nature of and the substance of the element that you are going to unite with. First, we have to have the same hearing, the same goal, the same nature of movement. Second, the substance, the ingredients of the people that we are uniting with. Because if we don't find a common ingredients or common substance, we cannot make a tea. I can put some lemon with the tea, but I cannot put some vinegar. It will kill it. So it's got to be some kind of people who are a little bit, have some kind of purity. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِقَوْمٍ حَتَّى يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِأَنفُسِهِمْ. The unity comes after you change yourself. You need some kind of element, some kind of stone to build up a building. That's quickly said, we can go more, but let's go to the third point. So we have to look for the mu'mineens around the world. Mu'mineens, believers in God. Because sometime you see Muslims, but they are not mu'min. قُلُوا أَسْلَمْنَا وَرْتَقُولُوا أَمَنَّا وَلَا مَيْدْخُلْ إِمَانِ فِي قُلُوبِ. I mean King Salman of Saudi Arabia. A'udhu billah. Does he have any faith? No, I don't think so. He's an Arab Zionist. Now, I have a lot of these kind of King other Salman of Bahrain. Keep that little girl quiet, please. صلوا على محمد وعلي محمد. Thank you. So these people, they are evil. You need some kind of real believers have ability to change, to modify. Should I? Come here, honey. Here, take the speaker. Either me or you. Okay, so you look for some stem cell able to change. You put it there. You put that stem cell in the heart, it will become a heart cell. In the brain, it will become a brain cell, able to change. So we need to look for these kind of believers. And believe me, if they have these kind of substance and this natural faith, it'll be easier to become a followers of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Let's go quickly to Karbala before I finish. Not gonna recite Majlis Azza, I believe. What is the substance of the followers of Imam Hussein? Some of them are Christian, you know that? Wahab. And his mother, maybe the first woman who was murdered, right, Umm Wahab, Ali? The first woman, she was, even his mother was murdered in Karbala. So he was a Christian, but Imam Hussein were able to attract his heart, to speak to his soul. He made him forget himself. He came to the wilayat of Ali Muhammad. Where else? He had some Wahhabis with him. I know there's no Wahhabi in that time. But he was an enemy of Ahlul Bayt. Who is he? The leader of Al-Hur. Al-Hur was the leader of the army of Yazid. But when Hussein started talking, stimulating the faith, waking up the conscience, knocking on their hearts, wake up their souls, Then they saw Hur moving this side and this side. They told him, what's wrong with you, Hur? You equal 1,000 soldiers. What's wrong with you today? You going zigzag. He said, أُخَيِّرُ نَفْسِي مَا بَيْنَ الْجَنَّةِ وَالنَّارِ. I am hesitating between the direction of the hell and the direction of the heaven, between Hussein and Shimr. Then guess what? He chose to go toward Hussein. So if Hussein was able to wake up the leader of the army of Yazid, and wake up the heart of the Christian, we can wake up the hearts of the world. So this is the amana, the trust is the wilaya in your hand. You got to use it in a very smart way. Then, I know it's important, in Ashura you see Imam Ali Hussein on the moon written. What are you talking about? Allah created the moon and the sun and the whole universe for the wilayat Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. والله ما خلقت سماء مبنية ولا أرضا مدحية ولا شمسا ولا قمرا إلا في حب محمد وآل محمد. We'll go for a question, maybe an answer. Sorry, taking your time, and the floor is open.
And of course, Shia Shia, if we're talking about overlap, and that the fact that overlap is what unites us, and we find so much overlap even with the Sunni school, then of course the Shia school, whose Usul al-Din and Usul al-Madhab overlap, we're going to have more unity. Usul al-Madhab, the principles of our Madhab, of our sect and denomination, what are they? Of course, Adl and Imamah, right? Our Usul al-Din are how many? They're three. Unfortunately, some people think it's five. It's three. Usul al-Madhab, add two more to this, they become five. So when we're overlapping in five, then all the better. Yeah, of course, Shia-Shia unity. This, none of the stuff that we said goes against Shia-Shia unity. And it's unfortunate that we see that there is Shia-Shia disunity, but that's right. There is an explanation here. What is the reason why even those who push for Shia-Sunni unity, why is it that they don't have unity with Takfiris? Why? Because a Takfiri does not see any common ground with you and him. Okay? And so it doesn't matter if you're Sunni, you're Shia, whatever you are, if you don't acknowledge my Islam, my Tashayyu, then there's no talking anymore. We have this with the Sunni school, with the Takfiri Wahhabis, Ayatollah Uthma Makarim, our Marja, one of our Maraja. He has explained that even Wahhabis, they're two types. They're the Takfiri types and the non-Takfiri types. He says we don't have dialogue with the Takfiri ones. That was interesting, I didn't know that. He says, no. Even Wahhabis, the ones that don't do Takfir, there's room to talk with them. Okay. So if we find the same criteria for disunity in certain Shias, what do we do? The criteria is the same. if he is doing takfir of other ulama, saying that they are all, this person is misguided, he is going to hell, right now he's burning na'udhu billah in the barzakh, etc. There is no unity here. I've seen that card, they play that card a lot. That's one type. Another type of Shia-Shia unity that cannot happen is when the Shia, some of them unfortunately once again, and it's not too many in number, but it's there, they are introducing Islam, a version of Islam that is crossing many red lines of Islam. To a point that I know, as an alim of deen, as a mujtahid, whatever, I know that this is not, I'm not allowed to support this individual anymore. I'm not. Islam is telling me you're not allowed to support this. Oh, it doesn't matter if they're Shia anymore. If Islamically I'm not allowed to support, because they're ruining Islam's image, they're ruining Islam, they're ruining Shiism. They're ruining Shiism. I'm not allowed to do it anymore. The same things that apply in the Sunni school, same here. Now, one addition that makes it even worse with the Shia school is that the Shia, some of them, when they are introducing Shiism or Islam in the wrong way, they are introducing it as Shiism. That Sunni who is speaking, he's speaking as for the Sunni school. He's not introducing the Shia school. He's introducing the Sunni school. But if I find a Shia that is crossing red lines to the extent that I'm not allowed to support them anymore and is introducing and misintroducing Shia Islam, that's the problem. You get what I'm saying or not? The Sunni's not doing that, but the Shia is doing that. All right. So Shia unity, of course. They try to make it sound like anyone who talks about Shia-Sunni unity is against Shia-Shia unity and is willing to compromise Shia-Shia unity for what? For Shia-Sunni unity. That's not the case. Don't be fooled by the way people play with these terms and titles and names. No. They make it seem like this, if you're this, you equal this. That's not the case. But yes, I am going to concede to the fact that there is some Shia-Shia disunity. Some people, they're wrong in what they're doing, and there's a lot of cases of Shia-Shia disunity that should not be there. But at the same time, there are some cases of Shia-Shia disunity that Islam has drawn the red line there and said, you cannot support this person anymore. Now, what those red lines exactly are, etc., that itself is a different story. That itself is a different story for another time, inshallah. Sheikh Na.
Yes, very good. Yeah, just a little bit. God bless you. So, what I have learned from Maulana, that the Shia, I would say tashayyu' is two part. One part is fundamentalist, ideological, which, for example, Imam Hussein is the part of the imamat, and imamat is part of the usul al-deen, the root of Islam, tawheed, ma'ad, nubuwa, imama, na'am, justice, adala. So imama is one of important, Hussein is one of the imam. So third imam, that's part of the fundamental ideological belief. The other part of tashayyu' is the stimulation part of the tashayyu'. What does that mean? For example, one time Imam Ali was sitting and Imam Hussein passed, baby Hussein. He was praying and he passed. He told him, come here, son. Baby Hussein, he said, me, father? He said, ta'ala. Ya abrata kulli mu'mini wa mu'mina. Come here, baby. You are the tears of all the believers. He said, me, daddy, I am the tears of... So, here you go. When you remember Hussein, he is an imam. When you remember Hussein as a shaheed, that's another part. It's got to stimulate your heart because Hussein is the one who gives victory to the resistance in southern Lebanon. Hussein gave a victory to the Hashd al-Sha'bi, the Iraqi fighters who liberated the Daesh area. Hussein is the one who is fighting in Yemen, supporting the Houthi and the Sayyid. So here you go. This is a very smart way to be stimulated by two parts of the tashayyu'. One part is the mental part, and the other part is the spiritual part. So be careful to have them both. That's quick. Please, other question.
Can I ask, Lana, if more books of the Sunni school of thought, the Hadith of Dr. Langer mentioned?
More than one.
There's lots of researches that have been done. I have a very bad memory, but I do know the Sahih Muslim has it for sure. The problem with Hadith of Thaqalain is that you also have it in Bukhari, probably, but the wording is different. The wording is different. Instead of the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt being mentioned, what's mentioned? The Quran and the Sunnah is mentioned there. That's the major problem we have with this Hadith, or else it's widely accepted, it's in all of these Sahihain and the Sihah, it's there. What I do know is in Sahih Muslim, the right wording is there, but it's interesting how some people still don't want to accept it. I haven't done too much research into it though. Yes, but the books are there that the ulama have done. So, anything you want to add?
Just like Mawlana said, it is more than 300 sources where it says, Utrati Ahla Bayti, my family. I'm leaving to you two things. Just, and he said, he's to his fingers. Ma intamassaktum bihima lan tadhillu ba'di abada. If you follow them, they will never be separated. Kitab Allah, Quran, wa utrati ahla bayti. And this is why Imam Ali said, ask me before you lose me. Saluni qabla an tafqiduni fa inni ana al-Quran al-natiq. There is two kind of Quran. One silent Quran we read, and one speakable Quran is Muhammad wa al-Muhammad. So just like Mawlana said, most of them, more than 300 sources says my family, but the very few says sunnati. Let's go for sunnati. Sunnati is what? Rasulullah said, Ya Ali, sunnatuka sunnati. Your sunnah is my sunnah. Man kunt mawlah fahada aliyun mawlah. It doesn't divide, even if we are going to go either way. It will meet the same place. But if somebody, his heart doesn't go that toward of Ahlul Bayt, it's hard to push him. Yes, go ahead.
They say, when you say Ahlul Bayt, they say that Aisha and Hafsa are separate.
We talk about unity, sister, so take it easy. See, neither one of us wanted to pick the microphone. So next, okay.
No, the research has been done. It takes a long time, sister, to bring the proofs, to bring the other verses, to bring the other hadiths that will show Ahlul Bayt what is meant here, the context. We have the same problem with hadith of Ghadir. We have the same problem with hadith Manzala. We have the same problem everywhere. We have the same problem in the Quran and the verses that talk about Imam Ali. Like, for example, إِنَّمَا وَلِيُّكُمُ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. And the one that says that they give zakat and ruku' and so on. And all of these have been discussed. It's very literal and textual. And it has to do with context clues. As the Shaykh said, in the end, we can't force people to accept. Yes, what you're asking calls for like 20, 30 pages of academia. Anything on unity? Yeah, so that, once again, that's the context, once again. The clue's in there, yes? But there are even some ulama that might have a difference of opinion there, right? In the end, I've even seen some Shia who have some difference of opinion. So it goes on and on. It goes on and on. I feel that this Shia-Sunni debate is one that will continue at least till the time of the return of the Imam. Some ulama say it's going to go on even after the Imam returns, which is interesting how that's going to happen. But some even believe that, right? Because if you're going to go back onto the texts, Bukhari is going to say one thing, Al-Kafi is going to say another thing. End of story. So it's for those who want to really think, and I think it boils down to how bad or good our Prophet was. Really, really, the Prophet would leave Medina for like a few days. He would leave someone in his place. He spent 23 years of his life bringing these people together, and he's going to leave them without saying anything. What a bad Prophet we had, na'udhu billah. It goes down to these things, sister, or else, if you want to go to the text, you will always have these arguments, and they will go on and on and on. Yes, brother.
You mentioned that there is a red line from the Sunni and the dialogue with Sunnis, and that takfirism is the red line. You can have a takfir and have dialogue. And then you mentioned that there is a red line for Shias also. But you mentioned that you cannot support them. I don't think it's mentioned that you cannot have dialogue, but you cannot support. What do you mean by that? What is that red line? And what do you mean by you cannot support them? Is it just not endorse that? Or like, what, how do we, like I'm from a community where there is very cultural, like very different types of people are, all of them are working, they all bring in their own ideas. So yeah. It becomes very confusing.
What I meant when I said that, you're trying to get me in trouble. I know you. I know you're trying to get me in trouble. But when I said red lines, examples that I can give you, I don't know. If I give you examples, you'll know some of the people that I'm talking about. So that's why I don't want to give examples. Huh? That's why I can't. Like, you're asking more for more specific details. But there are certain versions of Islam that we do not accept, we do not agree with. Versions of Islam that will tell you that you can be in love with any oppressive government. You can work with any oppressive government. You can, for the Shia cause, you know, work with anybody. No, we don't believe in that. The Imams have told us this. You can't do that. That's one. Another one, an Islam that pushes for a disconnection between the source of Islamic knowledge, which is the Hawza. I'm sorry, guys. Hawza is where it's at. I'm sorry. And I'm not saying that because I'm from the Hawza or I've been there like half my life or whatever. No. Even if I had not gone to Hawza, I would still understand this. I don't know why people don't get this. It's not something you read in the books. It's not that there's a whole oral tradition of Hawza that has passed on. And then now you have something trending out there where everyone wants to talk about Islam. I don't know what's so cool about that. I had to beat myself up to actually start lecturing. And then this trend of who says we get Islam from Hawza, we cut that off. We cut the connection and the link between Islam and Hawza. No, there is no such thing. It's not that we have a hadith about Hawza. We don't need a hadith for Hawza. Where is it discussed? Where is Islam discussed? Where are the most purest individuals that we've known throughout history? Where have they done this research? That's where it, and then now you have trends, and you can call it cults maybe, I don't know, where it's okay to get your Islam from certain books that you've read. That's it. Another red line. A red line that tells you, I'm Shia, but I'm going to do whatever I want, even if other Shias are killed. That's a red line. I cannot support this understanding, this ideology. I can't. Because why? Because I believe in the concept of taqiyya. The concept of saving people, keeping, protecting the Shia's lives is important. I know they'll have one or two stories, some people, that are gonna disprove what I'm saying. Those stories, they have a context to them. These types of things are what I'm talking about. These are red lines.
Yeah, you're right. So, if you wanna push Maulana out of the red line, I'm gonna backing him, so you are not gonna push us out of there. That's okay, the time is so short, but. About the talking about unity, looking for the element of unity. For example, the Sunni brother, when they pray, they have what's called a Salat al-Ibrahimiyya. They said, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad kama sallayta ala Ibrahim wa ali Ibrahim wa sallim ala Muhammad wa kama sallamta ala Ibrahim wa ali Ibrahim innaka hamidul majid. That must, they have to say it. If they don't say it, their salah is not accepted. So that's good, take that element. Then judge them from what they believe in. Now, Ala Muhammad, just like Ala Ibrahim, Ala Ibrahim have 12 disciples, they have 12 tribe leaders of Moses, they have 12 son of Jacob called Asbat, we have 12 imam, they have a holy lady Mary, we have a holy lady Fatima, they have a butchered son, Yahya bin Zakaria, John Baptist, we have a butchered son of Hussein. They have a Qa'im Ala Muhammad, we have Qa'im Mahdi, they have Jesus. We have elements, so when you speak about Ala Muhammad, there is only one Ala Muhammad. You cannot bring any more. And this is what the Prophet Muhammad saying. So you put that hadith of Al-Thaqalain in the
under the microscope of Islam and Quran microscope, it will show you the same nature of Ahl al-Bayt, of the wilayah. But when you take it cut from, disconnected from the others, then you can, they can make an argument. But actually there is no argument. The blueprint of the whole religion is Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. It doesn't accept. So, but what they created is like Daesh, such a weird creations, dirty, smelly, ugly. You know, killing, butchering. A'udhu billah. Where is Islam? They are not Sunni. Is that Sunnah Muhammad? Okay, forget Wilayat Ahl. Is that Sunnah Muhammad? What is this? Actually, this is an Arab Zionist. Actually, it is just like a Christian Zionist. There is an Islamic Zionist, but actually they are not Muslim at all. So let's take it easy. Let's talk to anybody looking for unity. Come over. We are united. What? Allah, Prophet Muhammad, Imamat, Quran, it's all united. Take it easy. But see, they wanted to take asabiyya, jahiliyya, ignorance. No, we're right. You are wrong. That's takfiri. Just like Maulana said, the takfiri evil element is a rejectional evil elements. Just like in the Zionists, rejecting Jesus' birth, they are rejecting Mahdi's birth. It is the same evil element. We have to look at it as a virus, and then we know how to treat it.
Yes. Any other questions?
We have time for one more question, and then after that,
you came in the wrong room. This is unity room.
I'm just going to answer that very quickly so we get another question. The hadith of that sermon that's detailed, that's in the kitab of Ihtijaj of At-Tabarsi. That's not in Sunni sources. All you have in Sunni sources, you don't even have this in Bukhari. All you have it is in Muslim. In Muslim, it says after the Prophet, after the Hajj, the final Hajj, on the way back, the Prophet stopped at a water hole called Khum, and he said some good things. Yeah. We have a whole sermon. He said some good things. Okay, what were those good things? We don't know. And yes, in the end he says, "Udhakkirukumullah fi ahli bayti, udhakkirukumullah fi ahli bayti, udhakkirukumullah fi ahli bayti." I'm telling you, be careful of my, take care of my ahli bayt, take care of my ahli bayt. And of course our Sunni brothers and sisters, they say we love the ahli bayt as much as you, if not more than you. Very simple. So no, you can't use hadith of Ghadir like that. Yes, hadith of Ghadir, I'm not putting it aside. Yes, it's not just Muslim and Bukhari that we have in the Sunni school. Let's see what Ahmad bin Hanbal says. He has more details. But the problem is, and this is why I said in my talk, that we have to see their approach and understanding of the Sahihain and how highly they revere it. There's a point why I said that. Because you can bring, as the Shaykh said, 300 sources, but those are considered secondary, secondhand sources. Firsthand, that's all they want. And they say, if it's something important, how come these two don't have it? That's the problem. So let's just end it there. Let's get another question about unity and then wrap it up. But there's a brother here had a question.
Yeah. So I've heard some speakers say that from the Shia perspective that calling for unity may be pointless because for unity you want multiple sides that have mutual interests that want to get together, whereas certain people feel that Sunnis don't feel that need for unity and that the calls for unity are mainly coming from the Shia side.
Okay. Maybe we're going to bring a topic good for the next session, not now. There is a Shia-Shia unity, Shia-Sunni unity, Muslim-Christian unity. That's a three part. We need to work on it, for example. That's one side. But I think, final word to say, if you allow me, the enemy of Islam, see, they are united. For example, Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria are fighting Actually, they are Zionists, and they are wounded people treated in Israel. And they said, we are Muslim Sunni. They are actually Zionists. So they wanted to have a colorful division or disunity in Islam. Shia Sunni fighting. In this case, we have to be careful. We don't want to bring, okay, we are Shia, where is the Sunni? Come on, let's have a fight. We don't do that. Why? We just wanted to carry the akhlaq of Ahlul Bayt. And that itself as a tashayyu. Kunu lana du'atan samateen. Be silent propagators for us Ahlul Bayt. For example, and I will end up. Somebody came to Imam Hassan. He said, Muawiyah sent him. He said, are you, Imam Hassan, you are the enemy of God. You are the bad guy. He just wanted to pick a fight. Okay. He said, listen, are you from here? He said, no, I'm coming from Damascus, Sham. He said, okay, if you are homeless, we'll help you to find a house. If you are poor, we'll give you money. If you are hungry, we'll feed you. If you need the clothes, well, you tell me what you want and we'll help you. He was such embarrassed. And he said, you know what? They sent me to attack you. But wallah laqad alim Allah haythu yada' risalatah. Really, you are the real Muslims. That's one way, one example. The other question, the other point is, when Imam Zain al-Abidin, he was traveling from Mecca to Medina, or Medina to Mecca, with a group. They don't know who is he. Then they said, they stop in the middle of the journey. They said, everybody, we're going to cook. We're hungry. Everybody bring something. So somebody said, I'm a cook. Somebody said, I bring the food. Somebody said, I will go get there something to burn, a dry wood to burn. So he went to collect the dry wood in the desert. Another journey, another people passing through, they said, oh my God, Imam Zain al-Abidin picking dry wood. They came to the same journey. He said, hey, which kind of people you are? You late Imam al-Insi wal-Jinn picking dry wood? They said, who? Where is he? They said, this is Zain al-Abidin. He didn't tell them, I am Imam al-Insi wal-Jinn. He was one of them. When they need, Islam need protection, he will come up. Islam need a knowledge, he will come up. Islam need a defense, he will come up. Otherwise, he's a regular person, just like Imam Ali when he was walking in the Kufa street, and he saw crying, a lot of crying. Remind me of that baby, was a crying, angry baby. And he was crying, and he knocked on the door. He said, lady, what's wrong with this kid? She said, may God revenge you from Imam Ali. My kids are hungry orphans. Their father was killed with his army, and he left us hungry. He said, listen, do you want to take care of the kids and I cook for you a bread? Or you want to cook and I'll take care of the children? She said, okay, okay. Just take care of the children and I will cook. And he started to, you know, keep the children until she cooked. And then he said, okay, give them food. They are happy eating. Then she told him, hey, wait a minute. Who are you? He said, my name is Ali ibn Abi Talib. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali. That's how we enforce our characters and reflect our unity and behavior and moral of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
I know we're over our time. Let me just add a little bit. You guys have nothing better to do anyway, right? Now, let's add some stuff. Two things here, brother. When they say the Shia need it more than the Sunnis, sometimes you're fighting a battle, you can use as much manpower as you can get, right? In this sense, when they say that, okay, fine. Of course our numbers are gonna rise. Even you might need us even, right? I know you're 100 versus 10, but 110 people fighting for a cause is better than 100, right? Against your enemies, first of all. Second, that's true. In that sense, maybe we could say, yeah, the Shia needs it more. But is that what the Shia is after? The Shia is saying, bro, there's bloodshed happening. As Imam Khomeini said, we're fighting over whether to hang our hands down or pray like this while the enemies are cutting our hands off, for God's sake. That's the problem. The enemy is after getting rid of Islam. Mm-hmm. Now, the Shia ulama, and of course some of the Sunni ulama too, it's not just the Shia. We have some good Sunni ulama too that see this. They see it. That Islam is in danger if this disunity grows more and more. And look at this verse of the Quran, Surah Anfal, verse 46. And obey Allah and His Apostle, and do not dispute, or you will lose heart. and your power will be gone, and be patient, etc. Till the end of the verse. It says, don't fight, you're going to lose that which you have. And then those enemies out there, they'll do what they got to do. Why did Imam Ali even keep quiet when they attacked? Because he wants to keep Tawheed alive, right? Do we want to keep Tawheed alive or not? The same thing that us and the Sunday school believe in. Yes. Do we want to keep Ma'ad, the Quran alive? Yes. So we're not supposed to fight each other. Yeah? People who say they need it more than you, they don't understand how the Shia is looking at this whole picture. Yes? So I thank everybody for their patience. Are we done, right? We're done, inshallah. And thank you, Shaykhna.
Thank you.
And we're going to end with a salawat, huh?
For shuhada al-Muslimin, recite al-Fatiha and ruh, the soul of Imam Khomeini, al-Fatiha ba'da salat, ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.